Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event. And that's what happens when you don't unclick the loop song. With your host, TV Scouting MMA, and
the guru back again from the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. We've got UFC 298. Alexander the Great Volkanovski defending his featherweight belt against Ilia Topuria. What a fantastic fight. But before we can get into that, we have a very, very special guest in the building. One of the MMA's best and brightest reporters out there right now. He does all the dirty work. He does all the interviews. Make sure you're checking him out over on Sportsnet. New digs. We love it. Well-deserved, Aaron Bronstetter, welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How are you?
Thank you guys for having me. It's been a stacked day here in Anaheim, and I'm happy that this is my nightcap before I go out for dinner with my crew after this. So it's nice to break down the fights and go up and down the menu and see what we've got for this weekend before I look up and down the menu at the restaurant that I will eventually go to.
Nice. And well, who better to spend Valentine's Day with the boys than Aaron Bronstetter? Let me tell you,
my wife would have a better answer for you than that. But unfortunately, she's in another country right now.
Well, that was the thing. I was like, well, I know my, you know, like our girlfriends, you know, like they're probably already, you know, a certain way or another. I was like, damn it, is Aaron really agreeing to come on? And then once I found out you were in Anaheim separated, it was like, all right, it makes much more sense that he's willing to do this thing. But who better than Aaron to join us? Appreciate all you guys in the chat. 138 MMA, the Tyler counterpart. A little Valentine's Day fight talk, exactly. Just what we needed. And Dez, the best guest. I agree, man. It doesn't get any better than Aaron Bronstetter on the ground in Anaheim. Boots are down. He's ready to give us all the reports from inside MMA. So make sure before we get started, if you're with us right now, please go ahead, hit the like, throw a comment in the live chat. Let us know what your best bet is during each fight. We'll bring it up. We'll talk about it, you know, as long as you're not getting too crazy. And then if you're watching the show afterwards, please also throw a like. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. And throw a comment in the ex post facto chat. Let us know your best bet. We'll comment. We'll reply. We'd love to hear from you guys in the community. But other than that, you can follow us all over social media. And Aaron Bronstetter himself, if you guys are somehow watching us right now and not already following Aaron Bronstetter, go and fix that problem right now. Just hop on Twitter, Google. You can find his picture and name and everything on Google. So just do your thing. Do the right thing. And let's get started because this is what you guys came here for, right? We've got Alexander the Great Volkanovski versus Ilia El Matador Topuria. This is going to be a great matchup. I can't wait. You talk about the highest of levels of MMA. This is what gets you up in the morning to break down fights on a week-by-week basis, is the opportunity to get fights like this on a pay-per-view, on a main card, for a title fight. Two of the best guys. Like, how long was Volkanovski on an undefeated run in the UFC? And now he faces a guy in Topuria, also coming in undefeated. Unbelievable talent on both sides. So I just can't wait. It's minus 125 Volkanovski, plus 105 Topuria. I hate to talk about line movement that I got before, so let's break down the fight now. It's Ilia Topuria, his boxing, his wrestling, his all-around MMA game, intangibles, his intelligence. It's on another level. That's why we've seen him make an undefeated run. On the other side, Alexander the Great Volkanovski, he's lived up to that nickname, absolutely demolishing the competition, whether by dominant decision or by getting, you know, a finish here and there as well. So don't doubt the great Alexander Volkanovski at any point in his career, taking his last matchup on short notice against Islam Makhachev up a weight class in a rematch where Makhachev had already felt this guy out and has the size advantage, and you're coming in without the full camp. Man, the one thing, though, is that after a guy suffers a KO, what does it do to him in his next fight? And does that change things here with the power coming back from Ilia Topuria? So it was an easy decision at plus 160. But now you, the viewer here with us now, what do you think at plus 105? Is that enough value for you to take the Topuria shot? And I think, honestly, it's just a changing of the guard time. I think Volkanovski finds a way to move up to 155 after this, takes on some good money fights, maybe Dustin Poirier, fights like that. I think he loses the title to Topuria and chooses to move up weight. That's my prediction. I could be wrong. Volkanovski is one of my favorite fighters, and I'd be happy to see him win. So regardless, I think we have an amazing fight. I love the over 3.5 at minus 135 if you don't want to get into a side. But because I got the plus 160 on Topuria, I also think that there's a better chance that Topuria would win inside the distance than Volkanovski. So that's my pick. I got Topuria. I got his money line. And I think the over 3.5 should be safe. But I'm taking Topuria and just not playing around.
What an excellent fight and a fantastic breakdown there, TB. One of the things that you see with Ilya Topuria is his specialness. What he looks like, right? I mean, he's absolutely one of the best prospects we've seen in, I mean, maybe since what? Since Conor McGregor, right? I mean, his rise has been amazing. I mean, even in the fights where, like, okay, like you want to point at maybe the Ja Herbert fight where he gets hurt, but he fights through that toughness. He's taking that fight on up a weight class. You know what I mean? And he powers through all that. You watch him fight Josh Emmett, and I'm so happy we watched Josh Emmett win a fight now, because it's like, oh, okay, Josh Emmett isn't actually washed. He just fought Volkanovski and then Topuria and got mopped. Like, there's just levels to this shit, and Topuria very clearly on that level. Plus 160 to us, we played that back in November, guys. That made so much sense to us. We thought, you know, Volkanovski taking 3 months off. It's only, what is it, 4 months? I'm terrible at math.
4 months.
Four months. It's not, I don't know. I can't wait to hear what Aaron has to say about the mindset of Volkanovski, because I just don't know that it was enough time. I'm scared about his mindset. You know, as somebody that, you know, works in the mental health field, I hear a lot of, you know, anxiety and self-worth talks, and like, there must be a ton of pressure outside, forgetting all the pressure he puts on himself, which probably is the most of it all. But, you know, you hear him saying he's got mental battles if he's not in a camp, needs the purpose. I wonder what this guy looks like without a belt, right? Is he even still the same fighter? That knockout was absolutely brutal, right? We as fans can write things off. Oh, he's up a weight class. Oh, he took it on short notice. You know who doesn't write things off? Brain cells. Like, that's real. Damage is real. Fight miles are real. So I'm very concerned about Alexander Volkanovski. Like you said, TB, one of my favorite fighters, would be so happy to see him pull through this. And if he does pull through it, oh my God. I mean, pound for pound, he's right up there with John Jones and Khabib. Like, I mean, not that he isn't, but it's just the cementing. You put it in marble now. So I don't know. I'm still on Ilya. I think any time at plus money on Ilya sounds good to me. I think you're right. I kind of like that over as well. If it does go under, I think that we cashed our Ilya ticket earlier. So, Aaron, I'm really, really curious to hear what you have to say on this incredible title fight.
Well, here's a doozy of a story for you to start things off. So I roll up to the urinal today to take a piss, and I hear the guy next to me goes, "Hey, stat boy." And I look over, and it's Volk. And I said, "Hey," you know. So he was citing, he's been on shows and he's been citing a stat that I pulled up, which was that in featherweight championship fights, the younger fighter is 15-6. But of those 6 wins for the older fighter, 5 of those belong to Volk. So you can bring up all these trends and stats and everything. And Volk has been kind of the guy to buck the trend. Now, this is one of those fights where it's weird to bet on, because you know that you're going to feel stupid if you're on the wrong side, because the writing is on the wall for both sides here. So if you bet the Volkanovski side and Topuria wins, you're going to be like, well, I should have seen this coming. Topuria is undefeated. Volkanovski's 35. You know, it seems like this was inevitable, that he's not going to be the first guy at lightweight or below to win a fight at 35 pounds. I'm sorry, at 35 years of age or higher. You know, he's going to have to make history to do this. But on the flip side of that, if Volk wins, you're going to be like, well, we got to remember that like 7 months ago, he put an absolute beating, clinical beating on Yair Rodriguez, who's like a legit contender. And since then, turns 35, loses to Makhachev coming off the couch after getting surgery, I believe it was, gets surgery, comes off the couch, just had a kid. Like, every single thing that you wouldn't want to do going into a fight against a guy as good as Islam Makhachev, he does. And are we putting too much weight on that? Because like, he's admitted that he was not in fight shape for that fight. Like, he admitted before the fight, I interviewed him before the fight, and I said, you know, would you say that you were training as much as you would during a normal off season, like not being out of camp? And he was like, no, man, I'm like, I haven't been training as much as I normally would, I'll be honest with you. So, I mean, we have all of these different things where like, you can say, well, he was 35, but hey, he was also fighting up a weight class with barely any training against Makhachev, and we saw the end result. And it was an unprepared Volkanovski, and he got finished. And like you said, Guru, like, brain cells, you need to do the accounting for that. And you need to do the accounting for Miles. And if you look at the last 4 years of Volkanovski's career, he's logged more in-cage minutes than Topuria has in the entirety of his career. So, like, the miles are certainly on the odometer for Volkanovski. But, you know, to me, I think getting Volkanovski at this price, 7 months removed from what he did to Yair Rodriguez with a full camp, I just find it hard to pass it up. Like, I think at plus 160, like you guys mentioned, that's like a very bettable range for Topuria. But we're starting to see this creep into close to even money. And while I think that Topuria has been on an absolute tear and he's beating a lot of really good guys, like the step up in competition from, like, say, a Josh Emmett to a Volk is a pretty steep step up in competition. And, you know, I just can't ignore the body of work that Volkanovski put together. The fact that he's had a full camp, he's still undefeated at featherweight, all of these different intangibles. But, I mean, skill for skill, I think that Topuria hangs with him. So I just think that right now you're not going to get a better price on Volkanovski as a champion against somebody who is relatively untested against high-level competition. Like, he hasn't fought the Holloways of the world. You know, I still think that Emmett is a great fighter, but still 39 years of age or whatever it is. Like, that's way past the peak of a fighter at this weight class. We then saw what he subsequently did to Bryce Mitchell. So that win for Topuria against the then undefeated Bryce Mitchell doesn't age quite as gracefully as it would have. I think I've got to ignore the recency bias and look at what Volkanovski did to Yair Rodriguez and think to myself, this guy's going to be prepared for everything. I just don't think you're going to get him at a better price than this in the future.
Yeah, I totally respect the take. And I understand. I mean, Volk is so well-rounded. He has such a good game plan, great gym he works out of, great training partners, and he has the will to succeed. So none of it would surprise me. I think Ilya's his toolbox is diverse enough and has the right attributes and tools to really get the job done. So the plus 160 is something that I'm happy to take a ride on. But, man, I wouldn't be surprised either way. It's going to be a good one. So please don't
let hedge out. Like, Volkanovski could be close to even money by Saturday. Yeah. You could go both ways on that at that point in time. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the underdog on Sunday night or on Saturday night, rather.
Right, so it got to minus 110 both sides, and now it's slid back a little bit here to minus 125. And I debated with the idea. I mean, do you want to secure a profit no matter what? Or, you know, but what's gambling, you know? Like, don't you want to have a little fun and take a chance? So I am on the more degenerate than the profitable side of things. So, as you know, I'm riding with the plus 160. So,
listen, I'll tell you this right now. If I didn't have 2.5 units at plus 160, right? Like, let's say I missed the boat. I don't think to after, especially everything I heard from Aaron, I don't think that I would be taking Ilya plus 105. I think you make a good point on the value of getting Volkanovski at minus 125, because you're right. If he pulls through this, right, let's say it's a 49, 46, 48, 47 decision win for Volk, right? Who's next for him? He just dismantled Yair Rodriguez. Right? Is it max four? That's the like.
There's Evloev.
Evloev. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But that nobody's guy, getting excited guy about Evloev. I mean, this is what it is.
But no, he beats sure. Arnold Allen, and he's on the doorstep. I mean, the UFC has done crazy.
He's made me a ton of money. So, except for
I'm not arguing.
Dawadu.
Yeah.
They did it against with Dawadu. That was annoying. But yeah, Ilya. This is a really, really exciting fight. I can't wait. As this fight gets closer and closer, I get more and more excited about it. I didn't know why. Originally, I wasn't that excited. But as I get closer, couldn't be more excited.
All right. Well, we're moving on here. We got Robert the Reaper Whitaker versus Paulo Bohachinha, or now the American style, the Eraser Costa. He definitely had a nickname change from the UFC. They're like, bro, we're not doing Bohachinha anymore. People don't know the double R is an H. They don't know what it translates to. So that's why his name is now just the Eraser on UFC stats. So it is what it is. You know, if you've been a fan long enough, you know about Bohachinha. But have we seen that guy for a while? Where's the guy that was finishing people out of nowhere, you know, losing fights until he wasn't? Now he's kind of like a decisionator, huh? Paulo Costa, it's interesting to watch the fight in Salt Lake City. How do you not finish Luke Rockhold? But then you're like, well, there's like an eye poke, there's a nut shot, there's a couple breaks, They're both absolutely dying and gassed out. And, you know, the T-Rex arms of Paulo Costa just sometimes aren't enough to get a knockout from range. He needs to get in close. He needs to land in combination. And then at that point, you know, Luke Rockhold's able to stay safe, to clinch up. So the question here, you know, Robert Whittaker, he's getting the big octagon to work with, man. He's going to be, you know, stomping the knee, circling around, trying to land little, you know, like step-in combos, switching stances. And I probably think he wins a decision. It's just, if this fight's going to decision and you have Robert Whittaker at minus 250, you shouldn't be betting the money line. It's just time and time again, if you see a fight going the distance and you're getting more than minus 200, you need to reevaluate. So is it Robert Whittaker by decision? Is it Robert Whittaker round three decision? Is it the fight to go the distance? What are you settling on here, Guru? Do you have something like that? I have a feeling because you sent me a little something. So I'm teeing you up here. What do you got?
I do have a play here that I think that there's some value on. I took the fight to go the distance at minus 122 over on FanDuel. I believe you can get like minus 135 on DraftKings. But I think with what you've seen from both of these guys is, and I know easy, I know he got knocked out in his last fight, but I think you've seen a fair amount of durability throughout their careers. And they haven't necessarily been the biggest, most prolific finishers throughout their careers. Robert Whittaker, who's always been one of my, you know, kind of soft spot favorite fighters, has not had a knockout win since 2017 against Jacare Souza. Like, it has been a long time for the Reaper to snatch his soul. And you look at Paulo the Eraser Costa, the only thing that he erases is himself from the schedule because he pulls out of every single fight. So, I mean, he doesn't finish Luke Rockhold. Luke Rockhold is begging to get out of the octagon. But at the same time, he's such a fucking dog that he barrels through, pulls through, gets kicked in the groin, you know, takes some time to recover. But, you know, then otherwise you're fighting Paulo Costa. Not Paulo Costa. He is Paulo Costa. You're fighting Marvin Vettori. Oh. Pillow hands Marvin Vettori. Like, that's – there's nothing up at 205. Like, there's nothing to worry about there in terms of power. So it's been a long time since he's actually fought somebody competitive. And this is going to be competitive. So I like the fight to go the distance. What do you guys? And I'm going to go with Rob. Obviously, I didn't really give a sign. I'm going to go with Rob. I think his pace is going to drown Polo at the end of the day. Like, Rob tried to outpace and physical a guy in Dricus du Plessis who, I mean, after you watch his run to the title, I mean, he was undeniable. He's the Conor McGregor of South America. South Africa. That's hysterical. The Conor McGregor of South Africa, right? Like, I mean, he just had the will of a nation behind him. He was hungrier, as Rob put it. And you have to watch out for those hungry lions. I just don't necessarily think Polo is that guy. So I'm going to go with Rob to get it done. But you're right, TB, minus 250. I don't necessarily love it. Probably put it in some tiny degen parlay because I don't learn. But I really do like my fight goes the distance play. Aaron, we're going to turn this one over to you. What do you got in this incredible co-main event?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think the fight goes the distance is probably the most likely outcome in this fight. And if you want to safeguard this, I was surprised by this line, but Costa decision equals no action is like minus 105. I was surprised that you could get that kind of a line on him thinking that, you know, his best case scenario is getting a finish. But I'm kind of like, to me, it's kind of a favor to pass situation with Whittaker. Like you look at the resume of Costa brings to the table, like, His win over Luke Rockhold is against the guy who was like totally out the door when it comes to MMA. Loses to Vettori at 205. Loses to Adesanya in that kind of fashion, where he's talking about how he was up drinking wine to try to fall asleep. Like, a lot of these are weird situations. Then, like, his last win before that was like in this city in Anaheim. Like, it was 2018 or 2019 against Yoel Romero. It was like a long time ago. So I just don't see the resume for Paulo Costa that leads me to believe that he's going to be able to beat a guy like Robert Whittaker at this stage in his career. So I think, like, you could probably parlay Whittaker somewhat safely in this spot. But I think you're right, though. Like, I do like the fight going to a decision. And you never know. Costa is the heavier hitter. And when it comes to scorecards, judges do look for that. So that's why I think that you've probably got the best route, Guru.
I love it. Love it. I love a third party telling me the Guru has a good idea. Sometimes, you know, I can't tell. You know, it's tough to that. Smell through and
I listen, I appreciate that. I've got the 2.5 units on that as well. But what I also find interesting, and that's to your point, Aaron, I'm sure a split decision prop on this is going to be like plus 450, plus 500. But what you've got Whitaker by decision at plus 120, but you've got Cody by decision at plus 650.
Yeah.
I mean, you could take a little grandma couch cushion. Nobody's gonna miss that nickel under the couch cushion. You know what I'm saying? You put that on there, all of a sudden you got six nickels. You know what I mean?
It's a lot of nickels.
That's it. Can I bet Costa doesn't make weight somewhere? If you find out where to bet that, please let me know. He did make weight in Salt Lake City against the one and only Luke Rockhold. But and then what up? It's Ghost. He made an alternate YouTube after he got banned for posting UFC content. It was kind of BS because he was using, you know, whatever acts. But what's up and welcome. He made the all when he found out Aaron was going to be on the show. See, this is what it's all about. Bringing back the great members of the Chronic Combat community to YouTube. There will be blood. What's going on, brother? Appreciate you joining the show. Black Cat crossing over. I hope that's not bad luck for Robert the Reaper Whitaker. Definitely interested in the microphone and the proceedings. Not the normal cats that Guru would be dealing with, so look out, world. But we're moving on to Jeff Hands of Steel Neal versus Ian the Future Machado Gary. This is going to be an interesting matchup. My question is, when I was breaking it down, you know, if a guy like Song Kanan is able to kind of do some things to you, and you look at the Jeff Neal fight, and he's able
to... Tell me about those things. What kind of things can he do to you?
Well, he knocked him down, bro.
Tell me where the bad man touched you.
It wasn't in good places, I can tell you that. But Jeff Hands of Steel Neal, man. I mean, he knocks out Shavkat's mouthpiece in round one. I mean, he's got legitimate power. He causes Vicente Luque. Now, on the screen, on the graphic before the fight, they were like, Jeff Neal has never been more of a dog in UFC fights. And then he proceeds to give Vicente Luque like a brain bleed. It's like 12 uppercuts in a row. It was absolutely terrifying.
Don't forget Mike Perry. Like Mike Perry like was changed Mike by Perry Jeff
destroyed
Neal.
Him.
Yes. Yes. The front kick, like his kicks are just as good as those hands of steel. So be careful, Ian Machado Gary, because when you take a look and if you go and you squint at the distance strike defense, guess whose defense is better from distance? Distance only, not overall. It's Jeff Neal. Guess who's getting pieced up in round one by Jordan Williams? Ian Machado Gary. Now, that's in his debut. It's a while ago. Now, guess who is getting clinched and getting his back taken by Neil Magny in round two? Guess who ends up, you know, getting into sketchy situations with the one and only Song Kanan? Basically, what I'm telling you is, if you want to end up with an STI, then bet Ian Machado Gary at minus 230 in this fight. Instead, try to find another way that you can play it out. I think the fight goes the distance if you're on the Ian Gary side is a great idea. I don't think he finishes much of anyone. Jeff has a chin of steel. And it took like, you know, Shavkat pulling like a, you're my little brother. I'm just going to pick you up from behind and choke you out. Like, you won't die, but I must kill you. So Ian Machado Gary, unless he's getting a submission, he's not finishing Jeff chin of steel Neal. So that's just not happening in my mind. So, and that's where I turn to a Machado Gary, like round three decision. I don't think he's going to head kick knockout this guy like a Daniel Rodriguez. You know what I mean? It's just not the same idea. Now, where I come off of the idea of betting a Jeff Neal money line or a Jeff Neal knockout is at the end of the day, I come back to the Wonder Boy fight. And I know it was after his near-death experience. But this fight is also after Jeff Neal's near-death experience with sepsis and, like, you know, meeting the scepter of death in the hospital before coming back to the UFC. So he looks a little slow, a little clunky. And, like, yeah, he's definitely a little more difficult than Vicente Luque, but there's a reason he was able to knock out Vicente Luque. Like, Vicente Luque is, like, very slow and clunky and hittable. And Ian Machado Gary is just a bit faster. He's going to land leg kicks on the outside. He's got the large octagon to work out of. And, you know, there'll be another day to fade Ian Machado Gary. Maybe. I mean, he could even be a title contender. You know, like maybe we're just hating on the guy's personal life a bit too much. Quite frankly, the guru would love to be in his shoes. I know for sure because he posts about it all the time. But Jeff, hands of steel, Neil, I can't pick you in this fight. The pick is Ian Machado Gary. The bet is round three or decision. And the degenerate couch cushions play is Ian Machado Gary by submission. So what do you got here, guru? What are you doing with your great money? Oh, what up, Camber? How you doing? What's going on? Sorry, I got to cut off guru real quick. How are you? Oh, my God. And Richie? What's going on, baby? Oh, yeah, I know. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the big guests like Clint. 2 weeks in a row, we had to settle for Aaron Brownsetter. So hope you guys are enjoying. You know, I mean, maybe I'm just saying. Time. I'm just saying I love Clint, but I think it's an upgrade. So took Jeff Neal scorecards, no bet. Oh, I like that. Yeah, if the fight goes a distance, it's definitely, you know, Ian Machado Gary in my mind.
That, sorry, that guru, was I actually got you something. Yes, you did. That was actually something I was looking at, JP Taylor. Decision, no bet, right? That's very, very interesting. I kind of like Jeff Neal at a decision, no bet, because kind of like you're saying, he is durable. But what he has been susceptible to is the submission. And you'll never guess where Ian Machado Gary, Machado, has been training at and who he's been training with. DuBronx. Oliveira. Could you imagine the scenes if he submits Jeff Neal plus 850? I mean, come on. Little couch cushion action, perhaps. Listen, do I think that's the most likely outcome? No, certainly not. I do think Ian Machado Gary ends up piecing and frustrating Jeff Neal to a decision. I really do think on some level it is as simple as the Stephen Wonderboy Thompson fight. I mean, the styles are very similar. I mean, Wonderboy's footwork is fantastic, but you know, Ian's faster, so I expect him to keep moving. To drop Ian like Song Kanon did, I mean, Neil wants to be in very, very close range, and I don't think that Neil is going to get there. So I'm going to go with Gary, but I can understand anybody taking a dog shot. Jeff Neal's a great, great guy and a hard worker and a fairly exciting fighter that I feel like we don't even get to see enough of, right? It's been over a year now since just under a year, actually. Sorry. By 2 weeks, just under a year since the Shavkat fight. So excited to see him back in the cage. Similarly, I guess if you do like this fight going the distance, similarly, you can get fight go the distance at minus 102. But I don't know that I'm like, at least at this moment, itching to get to the betting window on this fight. But I, from a fighter, from a fan perspective, I'm so excited to watch. And the pick is Ian Gary. But maybe Aaron can talk me into a bet.
I think that Ian wins this fight more often than not, but I think it's a dog or pass. Like, I just don't think you can take Ian at this kind of a price against the guy in Jeff Neal, who we've seen has the sort of power that he possesses. When, like you mentioned, we've seen Gary get tagged by Song Kanon and by Jordan Williams. Like, Jeff Neal's got a way, you know, way more firepower than both those guys. Like, historically, we've seen it. And, I can't get there. I honestly believe that Jeff Neal is a very live dog in this spot. It's not one that I would be going on. I think it's more of a pass because I think this is a volatile fight. I think looking at decision props, again, also very volatile because you mentioned Gary training with Oliveira. I saw one of the listeners mentions he's also been training with Demian Maia, which I spoke to him about earlier today. So he's getting a lot of different reps on the ground. But like, this is the way that people keep saying this is a great matchup for Ian Gary. Like, Ian Gary's got... this is the exact kind of matchup Ian Gary would want. It's more of a striking based fighter. He's going to be able to stand with him. On the flip side of that, this is exactly the kind of matchup that's good for Jeff Neal. Like, this is Jeff Neal's kind of fight as well. Like, we have to remember that as well. Jeff Neal wants a guy that's going to want to stand with him for, you know, a good duration of time. And it's not like Ian Gary is this credentialed wrestler. I'm sure he's getting a lot of, you know, reps in terms of his wrestling. I just think Jeff Neal is being very much underrated in this spot. I think Ian Gary's a great fighter. He's got shown time and time again, he's got very high fight IQ. When he was tagged by Kanon, we saw him bounce back in that fight and realize what he had done wrong. Even in fight, he said that he had realized exactly what he had done wrong and made the adjustments. Like, I really do think a lot of Ian Gary, and I do, again, think he probably wins this fight, but I just can't sleep on Jeff Neal at this kind of a price. I think that Gary's too much of a prohibitive favorite against a guy as good as Jeff Neal in the spot.
That sounds good to me. I get it, and there's a reason why I'm not parlaying out the money line. You know, I was considering a dog play. I didn't quite get there. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think you can put him and Whitaker in my. This definitely shouldn't be a parlay, but we're gonna parlay it. And to your point, Aaron, I don't think people touch on enough Ian Gary's fight IQ, his mind for the game. I think people, like you said, TB, are too busy ragging on him and ragging on his personal life to actually look at the mind and the athlete. And I think that there's a lot there that I think the future is an apt nickname. And there's a million fighters with the future as their nickname, and he's probably the only one that deserves it.
All right, fair enough. And I agree with you, Dirty Ridge. There is a reason why I'm like, you know, listen, I got to make at least one degen parlay per card. So we'll see what happens here. We're moving on. We got Merab the Machine, Dvalishvili versus Henry Triple C Cejudo. Whoa, we're talking a Triple C fight on the Triple C podcast, Chronic Combat Conversations. Do your thing if you know what to do. So we got minus 218 on Merab, plus 180 on Triple C. Guru, I don't want to steal any of your analysis. How about you go ahead and tell the people about this fight first? Go ahead.
Listen, the question really is, will this be the last Triple C fight that we break down on here on the Triple C podcast? Because Henry Cejudo has gone on record to say that if he does not beat Merab, he will retire. And I think that makes sense, because if he doesn't beat Merab, you know, what else is there to just kind of hang around and be a journalist? I don't think he wants to do that. He's made enough money in his career. He wants glory. This is his path to get it. I think if he does beat Merab, I think he gets a title shot. I think that's totally, totally fair. To me, I put out a poll earlier, and I asked if people thought if Merab deserved a title shot already. If after he beats Henry, does he get a title shot then? Personally, I thought he deserved a title shot already. And if he does beat Henry, I think he certainly deserves a title shot. But man, I think I'm on Henry at a principle, and I'm not sure how successful that's going to be. But I mean, I did pick Henry versus Aljamain Sterling, and it was a really close fight that, I mean, again, maybe I'm salty, but I've watched it back. Like I do feel he won 1, 2, and 5, or was it 2, 3, and 5? But I think it was 1, 2, and 5, but the fight was really, really close. And what Merab did to Peter Yan was absolutely devastating. I mean, we were on Peter Yan very squarely in that fight, and I was shocked. But when you look back at the tape, the way Yan needs to keep resetting is not necessarily something that Henry does. You know, his lateral movement's a lot more challenging for Merab. And I think if Henry decides to actually try to take down Merab, it could be very interesting. The other thing that I'll say is that one of the classic lines is, you get two wrestlers in there, you get two grapplers in there, they cancel out, and it's a striking fight. And I personally think that Henry Cejudo has the better striking. So I feel like it's a dog or pass spot. So I'm going to be on the dog here in Henry Cejudo. But I also think maybe, you know, I'll leave TB with the interesting prop, right? The grandma's couch cushion on this one. But what an interesting fight. TB, what do you think?
Aaron, go ahead before I give the people one of the most degenerate props you can place on this fight. And just a preparation, I'm going to let you start off next fight too. So just so that you're not caught off guard after I intro it.
All right, yeah, no problem. Thank you for the heads up. You're not going to get much from me on this one. I think this is kind of a pass altogether. If you are going to bet this fight, I would just say take whoever thinks going to win by decision. I mean, Merab's minus 125, so Cejudo's plus 350. I don't see a finish in this fight, in a three-round fight between these two guys. In terms of a pick, I think Dvalishvili wins, but I don't have a very strong feeling for it. Because like you mentioned, if the wrestling offsets and we're talking about these guys standing and trading, I think Cejudo's going to have more power. So don't really know, but I think that more often than not, this fight ends in a decision. I think Dvalishvili by decision is the most likely outcome, but I don't have a strong enough read on it. I think that this is kind of a wait and see. I'd like to see what Cejudo does in a three-round fight. He hasn't had one since 2017. And Dvalishvili wanted this to be a five-round fight. I think he excels in five-round fights because his cardio is just absurd. So in a three-round fight, I think Cejudo has a path for sure by decision. So I'm just going to stay away.
That's a great idea. appreciate you. Brian XBL on Twitch hopping in live today. He's the one that keeping track of all the best cappers picks out there. So appreciate you. Hope you're having a great night. Marab is funny. If you've seen his videos, they're just some of the best content right now from a fighter perspective. Can't think of a guy to pick over Marab. I don't know. There might be a couple. I think Sugar could actually, like, listen, it talk about a sniper and lengthiness, picking from range. I mean, maybe. But anyways, we're talking about this fight. We got Marab versus Triple C. We got, you know, a great one for the fans, quite frankly. And the way I came out breaking down this fight was like, so what happens if Marab takes down Henry? And it's like, well, Henry's not going to get down, be held down for an extended period, if not reverse. Okay, so then what happens, like, if slash when Henry takes down Marab? And it's like, well, every time Marab gets taken down, like, since the Science fight and all that, it's like, it's immediate, explosive, scramble, recovery. And if the first one doesn't work, he does it three more times in a row to break the grip and get back to his feet. I'm not saying that Marab has good top control, but he shoots more takedowns. I mean, you just can't argue with that fact. The other part of it is, like, if Henry Cejudo is going to win this fight, I think it has to be by knockout. I don't think you can outpace Marab Dvalishvili. I think you have to hurt him and kill the man, because he's never going to stop coming. And quite frankly, like, Aljamain Sterling needed to pace himself in the Cejudo fight to be able to make sure that he wasn't dying at the end of five rounds. And he still almost did, quite frankly. But, you know, it's a little bit different here. You're trading the BJJ and control and the length for the absolute blockheadedness that we all love in Marab Dvalishvili. I can't take the money line at minus 218. You already missed the best number. And Henry Cejudo, yeah, it's tempting. I get it. But just play his knockout at plus, what, 550? If you think you want to take Henry Cejudo, it's that he's going to pull the Marlon Moraes. He's going to throw calf kicks, and he's going to absolutely obliterate Marab with a counter right hand. And then from there, he's going to do, like, the Dominic Cruz, you know, crazy ground and pound. And it's like, Marlon Moraes can't do that without sacrificing the rest of the fight. Like, if he doesn't finish you in that first sequence, it's done for. So Henry needs to hurt Marab, and he needs to finish Marab. And if it goes to decision, it's just too close, and I don't want a plus 180. So I would say, if you want to take a degenerate prop to hedge out a Marab idea, it's that. But you know what, Rich? I got to honor my word. I was talking to him in the DMs, just win, baby. And, like, he's 1-0 on me. He's got the Aaron Blanchfield over Jessica Andrade. But this time, I'm taking Marab against the Henry Cejudo, his mush of the week. So I think Marab wins this fight unless he gets knocked out. So I'll hedge with the prop, and I'll probably have Marab in, like, the sketchiest parlay you can probably think of. So let's get cooking, right? We're moving on.
A tough fight.
We've got Anthony Fluffy Hernandez versus Roman Gladiator Kopylov. Aaron, what do you got going on in this fight? I need to know.
I need to know, too, because I don't really have a great read on this one either. I mean, I think that Kopylov's looked great. I mean, we have to acknowledge, really, both these guys have looked great recently. And I think that Hernandez, with a full camp, is going to have a lot of advantages here. And I think, especially in the grappling, when it comes to the grappling and it comes to his opportunistic submissions, I think Hernandez has a lot to offer in this fight. I think he wins this fight more often than not, but it's really hard to sleep on Kopylov and how good he is and how much better he's been getting. So, you know, I don't even want to say dog or pass. I'm going to pass on this one. I honestly don't have a great read on it. And I think that there are so many varieties of outcomes. I could see a Kopylov knockout. I could see a Hernandez submission. I could see a Hernandez knockout. I could see a decision on either side. It's just a lot of, you know, it's just a really tough fight to pin down. A lot of volatility. So I tend to stay away from those fights.
Smart man. However, I think I found the angle. One, if you want to do a degenerate parlay, you potentially could. But I think the smarter thing to do, and Daz, I think you took it one step too far. I think it's round two. I think it's Fluffy round two or round three. You can play both. But ultimately here, it's just that round one is going to be crazy. It's going to be competitive. Roman might stuff the first initial entries. But I just think the persistence of Hernandez and the chin of Hernandez and him being in better shape, not drinking like he used to. Like, I don't think one body shot is just going to put him away anymore. It's not going to be like Marcus Maluka Perez. I'm hoping it's not going to be like Kevin Holland, one knee to the body and you're looking for a way out. Like, if that's the case, Roman Kopylov lands his first body kick, you can count Anthony Fluffy Hernandez's night over. But ultimately, I think, should he survive that initial onslaught, by the time round two comes around, I just can't get it out of my mind. Albert Duraev, 10-8. Carl Robertson, submission. I mean, it's absolutely disgusting. coming in, this is the second time the UFC has booked Roman Kopylov on short notice versus Fluffy Hernandez. My other question is, like, Fluffy, are you going to make it to fight day? Because you've been pulling out a lot too. So as long as you make it there, as long as you look good, Roman, you were the most improved fighter from Chronic Combat Conversations in 2023. It's just like, on short notice, this is probably a step too far from a cardio and persistence perspective. And the finishing ability of Fluffy when he has you on death's doorstep, I got to play the round two and round three prop.
It's funny because I really like Roman Kopylov's call out of Sean Strickland. I think that's a really interesting, fun fight. I just don't think this is a really good matchup for Roman Kopylov. When we were talking about this fight earlier in the week, I texted TB and I was like, this fight reminds me of Armin Petrosian and Rodolfo Vieira from last week, a fight that we broke down twice, right? Got rebooked. And we were wrong. I was on Armin Petrosian. I thought that, you know, he would still work his way back up to the feet and that he would avoid the takedowns and he'd pull away in the later rounds. He got choked out. Why wouldn't I think that Aaron Hernandez
ain't choking anybody out.
Was he choking himself out? I'm sorry. Jeez. Oopsies.
Why?
He killed why people, bro. I'm allowed to joke about him.
I think that's fair. That's fair.
You're crazy.
If you think I'm not clipping that shit, you're also crazy.
Anthony Hernandez is going to be absolutely, positively relentless in terms of trying to get the takedown. And he's very successful at it. He's got different styles, different entries. He'll take the back. I just think that eventually he's going to get the submission. This fight reminds me so much of the fight from last week with Rodolfo Vieira and Armin Petrosian. The rebooking, they don't want to change the matchup.
Can I also tell you what's hilarious about that analogy?
What? Yeah, since you found it, you say.
Yes. So I was like, who's Roman been training with? Like, how is he getting better at his wrestling? And like, he's training with like a gold medalist, whatever. But like, guess who's sitting next to this motherfucker in camp? It's Armin Petrosian. You can't trust it, bro. How much better did he really get? He got choked out by Carl Robertson. And we thought Petrosian had what it took against Rodolfo. No. They got a little better at stuffing initial entries and they try to stand up, but like their grappling didn't get better. Their cardio didn't get better.
Anybody that wants to say Rodolfo Vieira is better at submissions than Anthony Hernandez, well, maybe you should go watch their fight back, brother. Because that was fantastic.
Yeah.
I fell into that Petrosian trap too, by the way, like hard. So I feel you guys. God.
Listen, he had him right where he wanted him on the feet until he gave up the takedown. God. Well, anyways, that was a fun fight to break down. But listen, it's really messed up. There's way more people in the chat than have liked this show, but you can fix that right now. Right your wrongs. Throw a like on the video. You're having a great time. We got the guru. We've got TB. We've got Aaron Braunstetter. What more could you ask for on Valentine's Day? Shout out to all of our loved ones for putting up with us and letting us do a show on Valentine's Day for whatever varying reasons. And make sure you're taking care of your people out there, all right? But And by saying that, take care of your people. Throw a goddamn like on the video, okay? Help us out. Subscribe to the channel. We're a good time, all right? That's all we ask. So, Guru, any last words before we get back to breaking down fights?
No, I'm so excited to keep going. This is incredible. Guys, please like and subscribe. Love having you guys on.
Let's go, man. We got Amanda Lemos versus Mackenzie Dern. I'll let their bodies do the talking on the nickname side of things. They didn't deserve TV nicknames. We got -130 Lemos. We got +110 Mackenzie Dern. I mean, I get it. It's a binary fight, but you look at the opener and Mackenzie Dern was like +200 at one point. And I kind of get it. Like, she's coming off of that Andrade performance and we think it's going to look better here against, you know, Amanda Lemos coming off of a disappointing title fight. Like, she's pretty old. But, I mean, Mackenzie Dern, I mean, I know, you know, there's a lot of things that could be said, but at the end of the day, she hasn't been training with the same gym that got her to the most successful version of herself. Like, she might still be doing rounds with them, with Jason Perillo, but it's like she broke up with her husband that got in a fight and caused her to move gyms in the first place. Now she's training with her boyfriend and Jason Perillo somewhat, but Perillo's not cornering her anymore, and that's kind of a big deal. And ultimately, it's why Amanda Lemos is the pick here. And I think Amanda Lemos probably pulls an Andrade and knocks her out. But the funny part is that what if she hurts and then subs Mackenzie Dern? Because that would be the funniest thing to come out of MMA. You know, like Mackenzie, like she didn't, oh, she, you know, what, like whatever. It's stupid, but ultimately my pick is Lemos here.
Yeah, I ended up on the Lemos side as well. I kind of vacillated back and forth. And then I went, whoa, whoa, whoa. Mackenzie Dern took this fight on short notice. And wait a minute. How long ago was that fight versus Jessica Andrade? That fight was 3 months ago. This time I counted three. This fight was 3 months ago. She got knocked down 2-3 times. That was a tough beating. And do you remember the narrative going into that fight? It was her and Jessica Andrade commiserating over their divorces and needing money. It was 3 months ago, and she's taking short notice fight. She still needs money. I don't like that. I don't like that she's with Jason Perillo. I don't like that she's dating her coach. Lemos is very similar to Jessica Andrade, except, you know, not as good, you know, grappling. Yeah, just really just not as good grappling in BJJ. So while there is a path for Mackenzie Dern, and this fight could hit the mat, even in the Marina Rodriguez fight, she's on top of Marina Rodriguez for a little while there. She ends up choking out Michelle Waterson Gomez, which, you know, will not be an option here. So the other problem, of course, is still the problem that's always been with Mackenzie Dern. She's gotten the fight to the mat a bunch of times with Yan Jianan, with Marina Rodriguez herself. Wasn't able to get it done. So on short notice here, I can't get there. So I like Amanda Lemos minus 130. Yeah, I mean, she might even get the KO. So we've seen Dern. I mean, she's got a good heart on her, but maybe the chin's not there. So give me Lemos. What do you got, Mr. Aaron?
I've done a lot of fence riding on this show so far, so I'm going to not do that here and firmly pick a side. I can't believe how tight this line is. Like, Amanda Lemos, I guess people are overthinking this because there's always a what if. What if she gets a takedown? What if she gets a takedown? So I think a lot of people are going to point that, like, you guys have the stats up there. If you look at Lemos's takedown defense, it's 55%. But what people are failing to understand is before she fought Zhang Weili, her takedown defense was 81%. Zhang Weili just completely outclassed her. Zhang Weili, I think, is head and shoulders above pretty much everybody in this division, short of Tatiana Suarez. I think that we're overthinking this if we think that somehow Dern has a great path here. First off, Lemos has the most power of any strawweight in UFC history. Like, if you look at knockdowns per 15 minutes, it's almost double the next person, which is Jessica Andrade herself, who just, you know, knocked Dern down several times. What does everybody talk about with Dern and her biggest deficiency? Her striking defense. Her striking defense is awful. Amanda Lemos has big power. Like, what am I missing here that this line has shrunk from minus 260, where it probably should be for Lemos, all the way down to minus 130? Hey, could she take Lemos down and get a sub? She's Mackenzie Dern. Absolutely. But that's like saying she has a puncher's chance, right? Like, that's essentially what it is. You're saying she has basically a puncher's chance. And not to mention, Lemos is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. It's not like she's a fish out of water on the ground either. So it's just all signs point to Amanda Lemos for me here. I wouldn't touch the total because I think that the knockout is very live. The knockout prop isn't great. It's like plus 200. I think you just stick with the money line for Lemos. It was at minus 120 earlier today. Like, if that line keeps moving into the Dern's direction, like, you could end up getting an absolute steal on Lemos if it gets down to like minus 120, minus 110. Like, it was minus 150 earlier this week, and I thought that was a good price. So I'm firmly on the Lemos side here. I spoke to Mackenzie Dern earlier. She's a sweetheart. I like talking to her. She said that she's back doing rounds with Jason Perillo in the gym, but Perillo is not going to be in her corner. She trains with her dad and her boyfriend. Like, I can't get behind Mackenzie Dern in this particular situation with this line. I think that Lemos is a really easy pick here, to be honest.
Plus 175. Yeah. For a female KO is so – I don't think I've ever seen such a disgustingly bad prop. Like, is there any other way to
– I was hoping it would be like 250 or something.
Yeah. What the
– it's stalwart.
Terrible. There has to be a better way to slice it. Like, could she even win a decision? Like, is it possible? Like, ugh.
Yeah, so let me make a comment. Some people in the chat going off here. You know, Dern, sub one, sub two, rising star, falling star. Might get the same takedown she got against Nina Nunes. I think I'm the only one seeing it, but Lemos takes up your decision. So here's where I start agreeing here is like, I just struggle to see Dern get her down. And that's what it is. Like, Jessica Andrade is one of the strong, like, you talk about knockdown power, like, of Lemos, like, Jessica Andrade is one of the strongest fighters in any division in women's MMA. And when she got Amanda Lemos in that standing head and arm triangle, like, I would have panicked too. I would have tapped out to Jessica Andrade in that position, okay? Like, she's so strong and it's scary. Mackenzie
you
Dern
not
is like
tapped. You just want her arms all over you, don't lie.
Jesus Christ. But Mackenzie Dern, I feel like it's a different type of strength and skill of submission where Amanda Lemos' technique actually might be able to save her. Listen, she survives against Wei Li, however ugly it might have been. There's a really sketchy person in the chat. I'm not going to bring you up because, like, how did you make that your username? But, and then, yeah, can't wait for the fights now. Let's go, Dern. I mean, yeah, whatever, Daz. I mean, you know, great times. But, geez, these chats keep coming in, so I can't help clicking on sketchy name Magoo over here. I mean, oopsies. But anyway, so, you know, listen, I got to go Lemos here. And we're getting in the territory of, like, I coined this when it was Ilia Topuria versus Bryce Mitchell. It's like a God's gift. Like, in hindsight, this is going to be so obvious that Lemos was going to KO her. So, Guru, what do you want to say?
Wow. Yeah. I was looking for a minus 3.5 also. If you guys see that, I'd be curious to know what the number on that
Let's
is.
Let's see. DraftKings might have something up. You got a minus 3.5, Lemos plus 105. Wow.
All right. I'm going to let the people decide for themselves. Well, what's wrong with my name? I mean, I don't know.
Obnoxious American milk. I mean,
Doug, that's a picture of like the always sunny person. Like, you're definitely not a milker.
That's DeAndre. DeAndre?
Yeah, right. Yeah, like, you're definitely not a milk yourself, right?
You could pick a better name. It's not that bad. Yeah. Like, it's not like,
I mean, they are saying legitimate stuff about MMA. So I got to give them some credit, you know? So, you know. I was just saying, it's like, Doug, what are you doing out here? Sweet D, baby. Yeah, right. I mean, I get it, but like,
if he's a fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, he's going to have an extremely risque sense of humor. So you did come to the right podcast. Don't let TV change.
Fair enough. I appreciate
it. Keep it PC, like PC principle.
Hey, listen. All right, so we're moving on. Appreciate you guys. Keep throwing likes out there because it's a fun time. Marcus Rogerio Pesao de Lima. I think I did it in the right order. Versus Justin Badman Taffa. And one of my favorite KO dances in all the UFC is Justin Taffa looking like he just found out his girlfriend was going to let him finish the dessert because she got too full.
that was a great tweet.
He like gets up and he does this. I'm like, dude, it's amazing. Like, my girlfriend would be screaming at me in the restaurant. That's exactly what I would do. So appreciate you, Justin Taffa, for the things that you do in the octagon. Like, legit looks like a Ninja Turtle celebrating that he's getting pizza. So, Marcos Rogerio de Lima, I don't understand, in God's year of 2024, coming off of getting his teeth smashed in against Derek Lewis, that people are out
That's
here taking
tweet.
Him
That's
at minus
tweet,
148.
That was my tweet, sir.
So I guess we're all on the same page.
I think we are, right? Like, Guru, go ahead.
Justin Taffa.
I'm sorry.
Justin Taffa is a dog. I didn't really understand why he was a dog. I already made the mistake of picking Rogerio de Lima against Derek Lewis. In my defense, I did get pick'em odds, and he slid all the way up to minus 220, and that was when I knew I was in trouble. But, you know, everybody's all week, oh, Derek Lewis is not Justin Taffa. Bro, Justin Taffa has actually shown some durability. Okay, he got knocked out in his debut against Jorgen, absolutely steroided up to the gills, DeCastro.
Well, he also ran face first into him because he was like a minus 400 favorite and just didn't respect him.
That too.
It was stupid.
Absolutely. It was his fourth pro fight.
It was crazy.
So if I'm going to play devil's advocate though, like,
please.
De Lima's one path is probably sub, right? You can get it like plus 600. I mean,
I can't listen.
That's kind of a greasy bet if you wanted to. if you wanted to look at one avenue, and you, even if you take Tafa at plus 120, you want to have a little insurance. Like, I don't think we're going to see a DeLima knockout, and I don't think we're going to see a DeLima decision. So the thing is, Tafa doesn't have much of a neck. So what is DeLima going to, I mean, you'd have to be like an armbar or something, or a key lock.
Maybe he'll do the forearm choke like
could
Romanov.
Be, could be a greasy heavyweight key lock. You never know.
It would be disgusting.
Make sure you save this, timestamp this, because I'm starting to see the key lock in my mind now as a thing. But I don't know. I think Tafa is a pretty obvious dog pick here. But if you want to, again, if you want me to play devil's advocate, DeLima, he's a solid grappler. He might be able to sub. Hence, Tafa is for sub decision. Tafa hasn't fought anybody who knows how to sub anybody.
But that is exactly what anybody betting Rogério DeLima said. He's gonna take him down. He's gonna sub him. Problem is, I counted. Keep in mind, I'm not very good at math. It was 14 UFC fights where Rogério DeLima does not have a takedown in. Like, there's so many. He doesn't land a takedown in every fight. He's not – grappling is not where he goes first, to his own detriment. He's more than happy to strike, and he's not –
I'm not advocating for it.
Grappler.
I'm just trying to play.
No, I know.
I'm on the Tafa side. Like, I think we all should be on the Tafa side. But I still think there's a little
bit of risk.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And it's heavyweight sloppy MMA. There's definitely some risk to be involved.
So in the dirtiest, sloppiest of fights, you really have to dig deep. So on the Instagram, you see Justin Tafa drilling cage takedown defense against gigantic Australians. Marcus Rogério DeLima is nothing more but an obese 205er, like, quite frankly. Like, the guy almost maxes out heavyweight now when he's pulling, like, the Jake Collier, essentially. So
yeah, exactly. Because I think he fought at middleweight also early in his career. So they're very similar to Collier. Yeah,
Justin Tafa would have to chop off both of his legs to make middleweight. This guy is made of like pure Australian steel. He missed heavyweight. He's the only guy ever, right, to miss the heavyweight limit.
I think there's two.
Was Greg Hardy the other? Because
You know who it was actually? It was I can't remember his name. Barnett. Chris Barnett missed also. After Tafa was the first, but Chris Barnett missed after him.
Can you please do your trivia this week and that be the question? I would love that.
I haven't done the trivia in a while. I should bring back the trivia.
Yes, I would love that. So ultimately, we're all agreeing here, but what would be stupid is to play Justin Tafa by knockout at plus 130 when his money line of plus 124 is right there. So just don't be stupid, because Justin Tafa has fought to a decision in his career. I mean, Carlos Felipe, but like, that was a robbery. And listen, Justin Tafa... You think DeLima has some calf kicks and some leg kicks? Like, Justin Tafa, let me talk about how gigantic those legs are. And he's athletic. He throws head kicks, body kicks, leg kicks. Like, he's an athletic striker, and I think he's got DeLima covered. And if DeLima goes for a takedown, I think Tafa has the underhook game to just stuff it. So
that's the other thing. You just mentioned his athleticism. That is the other thing. I think his takedown defense is underrated because of how athletic and strong he is. Wonderful point, TB.
Thank you. And then this is one of those auto bet spots of fight goes the distance, right? Like the one of those, like, it's like minus 600-700, but like, you just have to take a chance, right? So you just
What is the line?
I have no idea.
350 for fight goes the distance, which I don't think is great value.
Nah, it's not great. It's not as good as we want. This is probably one of those ones that just,
I got plus 400. I got plus 400 fight goes the distance on DraftKings.
I need like, I need minus 1,000 to fade.
That's
it, a tough, right?
One. Like, that's one where you feel really dumb when it ends like the first 48 seconds.
Yeah, a little grandma's couch cushion untracked. You'll never know what hit him.
All right, what's going on here? We got Frank made it to the chat, and D is arguing with Frank. So specifically the UFC. Thank you. This is pretty great. Appreciate you guys. Hey, listen. Exactly. Hey, listen, if you got two channels, subscribe with both. That's all I ask. So Dirty Reg, finish only, plus 108. Not starting a decision if it does happen to get there. I get it. But whatever.
Well, his money line is better than plus 108, so you've done bad.
That's it. Just saying. Well, it's like, I'd rather just take his money line at plus 125. I'm going to take like a few specific dog shots on this card. So far, I gave you Ilia Topuria. We gave you... Justin Tafa, and I got one more coming up for you. So
I'm guessing it's not this next one.
Let's see. It's not this next one. That's fair. We've got Vrinya Hybrid Nakamura minus 1350 versus Carlos Pequeño Vera. If you don't speak Spanish, Pequeño means small. That's probably not a good thing coming in against the hybrid here. I think they're about the same height. same reach based on UFC stats or Tapology or whatever. But ultimately, it's just like you have a 36-year-old making his debut in a lighter weight class. It's just we're doing this based on necessity, people. And Rinya Nakamura, if Ferny Garcia was on short notice, he would have finished him like our friend Hyder Amil. But instead, he's getting a short notice Carlos Vera. And instead of facing a full camp Ferny, and instead of facing a Toshiomi Kazama who just runs face first into everything, he's getting a guy that's never been knocked out before. So I'm taking Rinya Nakamura, the hybrid, by submission. I'm pretty sure it's plus money, but they might have dropped it. It's like plus 300.
It's like plus 300.
Let's go. Yeah, hammer it right now. Play it right now.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
I'm playing it right now.
Of course it's plus money. You stole my prop. I think we all.
I had the same one, so we all stole each other's prop.
We love it. Yeah, plus 300 by submission. I wrote it down earlier. On FanDuel? Yeah, plus 300 on FanDuel.
Okay, I'm going to lay that right now on the show. That's a full unit. I'm not going to place a unit on minus 1350 Rinya Nakamura, but I have a unit I'm willing to allocate to this fight. And if you're telling me that him to get a submission on a guy that's been submitted two times, making his debut on short notice, replacing Brady Heastand, like it's going to happen by finish and maybe Rinya gets the knockout. But that's just not the way I envision it going against a guy that's never been knocked out and is very willing to tap out and be submitted. So,
yeah, without a doubt, there really wasn't anything impressive on the tape from Carlos Vera. I mean, I really only got to watch two fights, and they were both guillotine chokes finishes for him, which is not an option here. So I don't really like him in the spot at all. And yeah, he's not super athletic. He's older, and he seems to be submission dependent. So yeah, don't like it at all. So Rinya by sub sounds good to me.
Hell yeah, appreciate that.
We're ready to roll.
Yeah, Aaron, you got anything else here?
No, I'm with you guys. I'm aligned.
Love it. Love it. That was easy. Yeah, this is another big question I had on Twitter this week. What would you take in a battle of the safari? Would you take the mountain tiger? Or would you take the gorilla? Like just, you know, like without taking this fight into mind, like what would you
do? Mountain tiger.
Fair enough. I was stuck in an octagon.
Aren't they? I think tigers are fairly like a good size bigger.
It's a good question. They're pretty vicious. They're longer and they have claws, but the gorilla is like thick skin and they're like, you know, they weigh almost a ton. So it's like, you know, it's a tough one. I think if you lock them in an octagon, someone was saying this online, so I really appreciated it. I forget who it was.
I don't know. When I think about fighting the cat, they just shred me apart. So it's like, I feel like a cat just shreds you apart. They're not fun.
Like the gorilla has a very thick skin compared to us. Plus they have fur. So it's like if he just runs through the mountain tiger, like I think if they lock them in an octagon.
They're about the same weight. Like a silverback gorilla is like 400 pounds and like a male Siberian tiger is like 400 pounds.
Okay. So I would like to apologize first off for lying and second off, I think it's a great fight, right? Like and in this fight where we have the mountain tiger versus the gorilla, you got Zhang Minyang versus Brenson Ribeiro, two guys that in their pre-UFC debut fights were north of plus 400 underdogs. Neither of them were expected to be signed by the UFC based on the oddsmakers' lines. And here we are. Now, going in – all right, hold on. First off, I appreciate you guys in the chat too. I'd rather be a gorilla. That makes a sense. I'm taking Mountain Tiger in the fight though. That also makes sense. Tiger, cats win. I do love tigers, so – and I love, like, that's my favorite animal. So I just didn't want to be biased, you know?
Interesting.
I mean, maybe. If he gets him in a takedown, it's over.
Their tongues are basically, like, almost like teeth. Their tongues can rip flesh. Like,
yeah, I know, but if they're already biting you, then it's like, you know, like, if you get the gorilla grip, man, come on. You've heard of the gorilla grip.
You've got the gorilla grip.
Jesus Christ, how would you know, Guru? That's terrible. Anyways, we've got the mountain tiger versus the gorilla before Aaron decides not to come on the show anymore. minus 118 Minyang and minus 102 Ribeiro. I took a plus 125 on Ribeiro and I tweeted it out for you people. So if you disgusting people are not following me on Twitter, go ahead, fix that mistake.
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people? No, but seriously, oh my God, now Charlie's in the chat. No, TB was actually the year of the goat. So get it right. Happy Lunar New Year. Happy Lunar New Year. Gang Hao Fa Choi.
Gong Hei Fat Choi.
We probably both got it wrong,
but at least I'm trying.
Yours sounded better though. Based on what my girlfriend's dad said the other day, I think that was it. So, anyways, Mountain Tiger, I'm sorry. I don't like your defense enough. You're giving up 6 inches of reach. You're the one that has faced the much lower level of competition. Hibetero, I've seen fight on the Russian regional scene against real killers and then come in against the LFA title holder. Whereas Zhang Mingyang in his road to the UFC fight got a random guy, Tokos, flying from a South Florida gym on short notice, flying to Singapore. And somehow that guy was the minus 800 favorite. What are we doing here, people? I wish I knew about that pre-fight. But anyways, when it comes down to the stylistic matchup, I mean, both these guys have gigantic defensive wrestling holes, but I think Hibeto fights better off of the back foot. I think he has better counters in the pocket, and I think he uses his range well enough to survive from distance if he can keep Zhang off him in the big cage. And if we get to throwing down, I'm taking the gorilla in this one, man. They're locked in the octagon. I think, you know, he survives some tiger scratches and comes out with the victory. So plus 125, I was happy to take it. Guru, I'm sorry. We've gone completely off the rails in the chat. We've got three members of Always Sunny fighting with each other. But I appreciate all you guys. So thanks for being here. And Charlie, if you haven't subbed yet, make sure you do too.
Jeez Louise, what a crazy fight. I think no matter what, betting on this fight is probably 1-800 gambler. But I mean, if you're listening to this show, you're basically halfway there anyway. But the cool thing about this fight is you've got two guys that honestly are fairly similar in their level. Like, this is going to be somebody's going to get murdered fairly quickly. I really do think so. You watch Brenton Ribeiro fight, he was an underdog versus Bruno Lopez, and he was also an underdog in the fight before that versus Fagundes. And in that fight, he goes for submission over position multiple times. He gets rocked earlier in the round. He goes for submission over position twice and nearly gets ground and pounded into oblivion. A different ref stops the fight. I mean, he really is this close to losing not this fight and the Dana White Contender Series fight. But he comes out on top in both, and now somehow, again, he's slightly an underdog. We'll take it to ride. So, and like you said, TB, it's really the physical advantages that have me on it. Because otherwise, it really, to me, is a coin flip fight where either guy could just give it up for absolutely no reason. The one thing I do also like, other than having the size advantage, is that only one of these fighters has actually won a fight outside the first round. And that's our guy, Brenton Ribeiro. So anytime, literally all 16 of Mountain Tiger's wins have come by first round finish. So if you like him, you take him first round finish. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I would go with Ribeiro by KO, TKO. It's like plus 220. I think that's probably a better way than playing it straight, a more likely outcome than it's going to a decision or a submission or anything along those lines. So that's the way I would play it. I mean, you could like round robin that with a couple other props that we talked about. Like you could look at the Tafa KO prop, depending on what that's at. You can look at the Nakamura submission prop, round robin a couple of those props together and hope that like three out of the five of them hit and you hit a nice plus number.
Nice. I love it. Oh my goodness. Look, listen, Mr. Elon Musk from X, you need to free Lou Betcha. Appreciate you for joining, buddy. sorry. What up, Lou? How you doing? But yeah, buddy, make sure, I don't know, create a burner, reach out in some way. this is pretty good. Legitimately two guys in German soccer, Phil Titz and Jiz Hornkamp. And Lou is just degenerate enough to parlay. Those are legitimately... real name. Well, it's Phil Teets, like no, they're not. Mixed in there. Bro, go look it up. I'm dead serious. Like, he posted the bets. It's amazing.
Me, but more you can't... MMA.
Yeah, Lou Betcha is suspended on Twitter for threatening his co-host Monk for winning a year-long betting competition. So that's
MMA will always at least have Bong versus Kuntz. We'll always have that.
Yes. Thank you, Aaron. That's a great matchup. You can't take it away from us. But here we go. We've got something you can take away from me is Josh Bushido Quinlan versus Danny Left-Hand to God Barlow. No, I'm just kidding. There should be some fucking violence.
I'll take this.
Yeah, it's crazy. No, I was just kidding. I was just transitioning, you know. Well, oh my God, no, I wasn't. So Josh Bushido Quinlan versus Danny Left-Hand to God Barlow, trying to avoid cancellation, so we're moving on. +160 on Quinlan, -192 on Barlow. My God, wait a second. I'm trying to put it together. I feel like these Always Sunny characters have to be Lou Betcha. But anyways, Left-Hand to God, Danny Barlow. I know he's inexperienced, but like, couldn't you make the same argument about Josh Quinlan? And didn't he just fight a less athletic version of Danny Barlow and Trey Waters? And I hate to be like, you know, like reductive, but in the same token, we saw Quinlan have trouble closing the distance and making things happen on a consistent basis against a guy that's less athletic and had, you know, not as good of overall striking. Like Barlow, when he's able to stand a distance and pick his range and counters, he lands heavily. And I don't think it's just a matter of Quinlan going in here and shooting a takedown. Like the size differential and the advancements in his game that I've expected Barlow to be making at this point, I'm not fading him with Josh Quinlan giving up, you know, 2 inches of height, 7 inches of reach. Quinlan's already been suspended for steroids, so he's probably not on as many steroids at this point. Like Danny Barlow, he hasn't gotten caught yet. By God, if that's just God's natural talent, then Left-Hand to God, he never took any steroids. So I just think Danny Barlow here, he's going to end up doing his thing, getting like either a head kick knockout or picking him off with the counter in rounds two or three. But I think if anything else, rather than being like one of the Thomas the Train favorites that just came out recently, I think this is more like a Carlos Prates where he might lose round one grappling, but by the time round two comes, like we're trusting Josh Quinlan to wrestle for multiple rounds because he's not winning on the feet, guys. Like, let's be honest with ourselves, right? So if you're taking a Quinlan shot, like I get it, like it's cute, but man, when I looked on paper, it was a lot cuter than it actually is when you break it down. So Guru, what do you got here?
I feel like this fight is really, really similar, at least for Josh Quinlan, as it to the Trey Waters fight, right? I mean, this is a guy that's a bit longer than him, bigger than him, more athletic than him, except this time Danny Barlow is a lot faster and has power, right? I just don't really like this matchup for Quinlan. And I feel like they're kind of, especially after he lost to Trey Waters, like I don't know how much these into him anymore. Left Hand of God is definitely a more interesting fighter because he seems, like you said, TB, he seems like he's got the real power in his hands and not the steroids power in his hands. So, I mean, you know, I'm a fan of Raheem Forrest, even though he's, you know, obviously, you know, not great. He lost to Left Hand of God, and then he subsequently lost his next fight in CFFC. But, you know, I just don't – by the way, where has Trey Waters been? That's what I want to know. Like, I'd love to see that guy fight again. He hasn't fought either since this last fight, which was already, you know, 10 months ago.
It probably takes him, like, 11 months to weight cut, if I had to guess.
That was maybe one of your best jokes, TV. That was great.
Wow. Not too shabby, right?
It was because you was witty, too, and you came up with it on the spot. I like that.
Yeah, you know I didn't do that ahead of time, so I'm on it right now.
I'm going to go with favorite or pass. And, God, that over 1.5 is, like, kind of calling to me, but I'm not going to go there. He probably gets bonked. I'm just going to go with Barlow and leave it alone. I won't touch this fight unless Aaron talks me into something. What do you got, Aaron?
Well, I'll preface this by saying I never bet under 1.5s. I'm going to take the under 1.5 in this one. Like, these guys are just going to slang. Josh Quinlan's got big power. He's going to test his power against Barlow, and, you know, someone's going to fall. The fight ends in round one is like +200. That's another one that I would look at instead of the under. I think we're overthinking things if we're like, can it get into the later rounds? It was like, I was trying to do that with that, the gorilla versus the tiger as well. Like, yeah, can this maybe get extended because it's in the UFC and it's a bigger cage? Maybe, but I'm going to take the data that I have here. I think that this fight goes under the 1.5. rounds. It's like +135, and if you're feeling frisky, +200 fight ends in round one. I don't see this one lasting very long.
You're telling we're getting plus 160 on the KO prop. Can I place that right now immediately?
Yeah, that's not
bad either. Bro, I thought it was going to be minus 150 type of vibes. Oh,
that's why I like the under, though. For like at under one and a half rounds at plus 130, like Quinlan's got solid power too, right?
You're right. You're right.
All it takes is Barlow keeping his chin up a little bit too high and he'll go down.
Listen, he passed the what was it?
Which he does, by the way. He does keep his chin up too high. He does.
He passed the Jason Witt test. So.
Oh, there you
yeah,
go.
But that doesn't mean anything.
Well, if you that's can like knock out Jason Witt with one punch, you have legit power. Right?
That's true. Jason Witt is usually at least when he gets knocked down, he gets back up again, Chumbawamba style. But
yes, he's,
good song.
Nice. Well, let's hope Josh Quinlan doesn't get back up again if we have the under 1.5 bet. But hey, listen, it Jason can be Witt, too, right?
But at the same time, Jason Witt has 9 pro losses. And 7 of them are by knockout. So, you know, button goes off. That button goes off fairly quickly.
All right. This is where I digress from the guru. This is the part of the show. Right. We've got Oba and Elliot at minus 310, the Welsh gangster versus Val the Animal Woodburn plus 250. We're breaking down a Valentine Woodburn fight on Valentine's Day. Does it get any better than this? Yeah. And when you're telling me that he's got the Cupid powers of Valentine's Day this week, and you're telling me Val Woodburn's got a 2-inch reach advantage, I know he's 4 inches shorter, but stout guys generally hold up when you go to take them down, right? Like, and what does Oba and Elliot like to do? Go for takedowns? Now, I know Val Woodburn isn't sexual when you're talking about fighting from distance. Like, the guy, he's, like, overreactive. He doesn't love, like, playing a distance game. But at the same time, like, I really think he's got the ability to make this the ugly cage pushing clinch fest if he can't land a stupid knockout at some point. And I think the reach plays into his advantage, one in the grappling and then the height, being the smaller guy and being a bowling ball, a guy that's fought at 205 and won fights at 205 against guys that tried to wrestle him and take him down. Like, Val Woodburn is legitimately built like my refrigerator that I used in my UMass dorm back in 2009. The guy is just like, it's, you know, you could cut from his shoulders down and you can't find any discrepancy in the rectangular activity. But I'm going the Animal here. Give me that action. I know he came in and got starched by Bo Nickel. That was up at 185. He's coming down to 170. Oba and Elliot was life and death with Kaique Brito on Dana White's Contender Series, and he nearly chose death. However, he survived. Yes, he made it, right? It was a majority decision. Now he's minus 310 in this economy in 2024, where I have to pay, like, what? You go to the store and you want to get grapes, and you got to pay, like, fucking $3 a pound for grapes. That I'm going to pay minus 310 for Oba and Elliot? Are you fucking out of your mind? There's no way. There's no way. And he has to do it by wrestling? You're on crack. If you think that I'm picking or betting Oba and Elliot, this is the trap spot. This is it. This is the Contender Series bum. And it's, oh, he got knocked out by Bo Nickel. Like, Val Woodburn's head never hit the canvas. The ref did him a solid. He said, hey, buddy, you're going to die in a couple seconds. Like, his chin really didn't get that fucked up in the fight. Let's be honest. Go watch it back. No. Go watch it back. He never actually, his head never hits the canvas. He's fully there. He's like, oh, thank you for stopping the fight, Chris Tognoni. Of course. Oba and Elliot's not going to do that to you. I'm sorry. Bo Nickel has knocked out people cold on the regional scene. Oba and Elliot humps your leg until you say daddy. And then it's Cage Warriors. Cage Warriors is as fraudulent as it gets. I'm telling you. Go look at some of their big prospects coming off Contender Series and making their debut at a big money line. Val Woodburn, the Animal, don't fuck around with knockout. He could win a decision.
You know who's the like double champion Cage Warriors, right?
I even like the over 2.5 at plus 135. What do you got, Cougar?
You know who was a double champion Cage Warriors, right? I'm asking you.
Conor McGregor.
Conor McGregor. Yeah, okay. And you know who's going to lose his next fight? Probably Conor McGregor. Great. Live in the past.
I thought you were going to say Paddy Pimblett, which would have been correct as well.
He's also going to lose his next fight.
Also a two-division champion.
There's only so many times that you can have, like, a fraud organization continue to put out guys.
Wasn't there another double champion
that
came to the UFC and, like, lost 2 in a row and got bounced?
Yes, it was Mason Jones.
Mason Jones.
Oh, Mason Jones.
Reese McKee's also a fraud. Can we keep on naming the names? There was another guy that came off Contender Series that was a minus 200 favorite or went to Contender. He didn't even win on Contender Series. He was a minus 600 favorite.
Hardwick,
the guy
right? George Hardwick.
Thank you. Yes.
George Hardwick with the tail, with the rat tail.
A different referee stops that fight. He's losing to Val Woodburn. Guru, tell me I'm stupid because I'm bringing that Bogdan Guskov energy once again.
I just feel like I'm picking Oban to win by decision, but like, God, you make compelling points, especially when I keep saying you have to fade chalk. Like,
you're on cocaine if you're betting Oban Elia minus 310. You're on.
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, especially when props are going to be baked in, you have to take Val Woodburn by knockout. Damn, TB, you made a really good argument. That was impressive, bud. Aaron, what do you think?
If he didn't make that argument, I was going to make it before him. I feel exactly the same way. And not to mention, like, Woodburn trains at Fusion XL. Like, he's on the mats with Jacare and all of these guys trying to take him down. And from what I heard before the Bo Nickel fight, and I mean, it's empirical evidence, but all the people that trained with him were talking about how great this guy is. And listen, against Bo Nickel, you're not going to look great on 6 days' notice, no matter who you are on this planet. You could pull a future champion off the couch in 6 days, and he's going to probably lose to Bo Nickel. So, I think at this price, like, I wasn't that impressed with Oban Elliott. I thought he snuck out a win on the Contender Series. I had him winning that fight, but certainly didn't come easy. I think Woodburn is the side at this kind of price. Like, I don't think you can go wrong with Val Woodburn at plus 260. It's a crazy number. That number really is a crazy number.
Do I have tinfoil anywhere? Because listen to this.
No,
one.
You got
I
me.
Think the UFC. I think that I think the UFC told Val Woodburn he wasn't allowed to beat Bo Nickel, and you got to take a dive. But we'll bring you into the UFC, kid. We'll bring you in, baby.
I don't even think that was needed. I think that he was legitimately not on Bo Nickel's level. And now they're giving him a soft landing here, really, instead of throwing him to the dogs.
Yes.
This is a soft landing.
No, I agree. I agree. Thank you, Aaron, because that was being a little bit ridiculous and facetious. Oh. But I appreciate you guys in the chat too. He was a setup fight. He's getting disrespected on recency bias. Oban Elliott at minus 310, you would legitimately have to be using multiple types of drugs and have AIDS all at the same time to bet it.
I really think you sold me, because what you watch on the tape, he's just so explosive and strong. And those knees in the clinch are devastating. Oban, I really do like Oban striking. I just think he's so incredibly well-rounded.
No.
He's very fun to watch.
His I don't like his problem chin. Is
that well, I was just about to say his biggest problem, and it's why you gotta fade him here at this number, is his striking defense. His striking defense is very problematic. He just tries to kind of jerk his head back and slide out of range, and that's not gonna work well versus
I have a feeling we're all gonna be aligned on this next one. I have a feeling we're all gonna be on the same side of this next one.
Why don't you guys get that vibe from
what I'm saying? Okay,
yeah.
I mean
yeah,
listen. Miranda Maverick, Andrea Lee.
Go ahead, Lee's plus
Aaron. 154, Maverick minus 185. The over is 2.5 is minus 330, under 2.5, plus 240. Come on. This is have we learned anything? This is Andrea Lee by decision a million times out of a million at this price.
Split decision.
Listen, if you can find a split decision prop, you take that split decision prop. Do I think Miranda Maverick has probably more often than not wins this fight? Yeah, probably. But we're talking about relying on judges to take. First off, Andrea Lee's always in these close fights. Where you're talking decision or split decision. Looking at this prop, let me look at this decision prop here. Let me get it up. So we got Lee decision is plus 240. Maverick decision is like even money. Is she really that more likely to win a decision over Andrea Lee in what's going to be a close fight? I don't think so.
No.
To me, this is Andrea Lee by decision all day. Like, one of the easier picks on this card. And even if you end up losing, it'll probably be because she lost that decision. This fight's going to go the distance. It's going to be a close fight like all Andrea Lee fights. And if it's not, and Miranda Maverick finally has that breakout performance that we've been talking about for the last 6 years, then, you know, sorry, I'll have egg on my face. But personally, I think that this is a Lee decision bet all day.
Yeah. Honestly,
Andrea Lee by decision is plus 220. Sorry, TB, you go.
No. I mean, listen, this is one where all me and Guru have been saying to each other through message all week is like, we just have no idea. We just have no idea. And it's like, I was even talking to him right before I left work today. And I was like, listen, man, like, I don't know how you don't bet the split decision. I'm like, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Andrea Lee wins. And it's like, at the same time, how do you not just take that chance? Like, we're talking about a fight that's going to distance. We're talking about women's MMA. We're talking about 3-inch height advantage or 4-inch, 3-inch height advantage, 4-inch reach advantage. And Andrea Lee is going to be getting screamed at by Tony Kelly. Like, she's going to be nasty in there. I'm just saying. You look at her last fight and, like, Tony Kelly, no holds barred, going into round 3 against Natalia Silva. But ultimately, like, I could see a world where Miranda Maverick, like, if she leveled up the way that she's like, is claiming, and, like, they're pricing her in this fight at minus 185, I would almost rather take, like, Maverick by sub, because I don't want any piece of her if it's going to decision. I think she's not going to land the bigger shots. I think Lee's clearly the better striker that's faced better fighters. And Andrea Lee is just, it's not pretty. I hate on her for being a Nazi enthusiast. Like, she was legitimately married to someone had.
Yeah. I mean, hey, like, you got to look. Look past the bad stuff when we're talking about this sort of thing. But
well, that's why I faded her. I
certainly can't get behind that.
Of course. Well, I've still faded her in, like, every other fight up till this one. And this is where I'm like, God damn it, I need to put my foot down and take the Nazi sympathizer. Like, Andrea Lee, it really sucks that you're part of the KGB and you like sleeping with Nazis who have Nazi tattoos. And even though you broke up with one Nazi, you probably ended up dating another closet Nazi, if I had to guess. But anyways, yeah, before I get sued for slander and libel, Miranda Fear the Maverick, she's more invested in her pickle business than actually finding a good submission game. So
she's wild. She's got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I don't know, man. She's like a full-time, like, I want to be a lawyer. I want to be this. I want to be an MMA fighter. I'm going to be the best in the world. It's like, well, you also lose by disappointing decision every once in a while. And why not this weekend? And yes, it's going to be split. It's going to be disgusting. It's going to be as disgusting as obnoxious American MILF number one. But we appreciate Grateful Dude. We appreciate you, JP Taylor. Yeah, just flip a coin if it goes to decision. So take a splitty.
Yeah.
Andrea Lee, how many times has she gone to a split decision? Like, it's unheard of.
So, yeah, I just think, like, I think it's going to be a close fight, right? And, like, if she's the underdog in these spots, I always tend to lean, like, you can get the underdog at much better value on the decision prop than the favorite. In a competitive division like this, you know it's going to be a competitive fight. I just think it's kind of an obvious thing to do at this point in time. And if you lose, again, if you lose a close decision, it goes the other way, you know, at least you know you had the value side and it was going to be, and it was a close fight.
Didn't those guys team up in World War II? What are we talking about? They're affiliated. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. All right. Anyways, Guru, what do you got going on?
I was going to say, Andrea Lee has 3 split decisions in her UFC career. Miranda Maverick herself has 1. So that's already, we got some interesting makings right there. The thing in Miranda Maverick's last fight with Priscilla Cachoeira, she goes 3 of 9 on takedowns or whatever. And it was the 3 that she got were the ones that she needed to stay on top. Andrea Lee is way more annoying and difficult to take down. And she's got some wrestling of her own, which she used versus Macy Barber in a fight that she probably should have won. They honestly both should have beat Miranda Maverick, but that's just me saying that. Oh, thanks, Kiwi. Appreciate Kiwi. You, man.
You're a good man.
Well, 10 Australian dollars. That's worth like $3, but thank you nonetheless, Kiwi. I mean, we'll take what we
appreciate. That is fair. We've done the conversion. It doesn't work out so highly, but we'll take anything we can get. That's grandma's couch cushion right there. We're going to use that to place.
Yeah, what are we going to use that on? What are you guys using that one on? Which pick your couch cushion of the week?
So for me, the couch cushion of the week is Anthony Fluffy Hernandez by round 2 or 3 finish.
Oh, I love that. That was dirty. I love that.
So thank you, Kiwi. I'll be throwing that $4.70 Australian or US, I should say. And all right, like, I get it, but also, like, you know, come on. They fought each other because, you know, Hitler was trying to expand. Anyways, before I get into the rabbit hole and late Miranda sub, like, I guess, you know what I mean? Like I said, if there was a prop you were going to play on Miranda, it's probably for her to get a sub because that's like the only way she covers. Lee's been sub before, all that. But just want to say, as we come to a close here, really appreciate everybody in the chat here. Absolutely electric show. Just a great time. I mean, one thing that I'll say is, like, we have a lot of guests on that are awesome, but, like, nobody really gets the premise more than Aaron. And I love what he contributes and brings to the table to have a good time and just, like, enjoy fights, because that's what it comes down to. Like, all of us here just love MMA fights and UFC and breaking it down. Camber, You're too kind. Really appreciate you, Gamberly out there in the Twitter world. Those are US dollars, so those hold up on the 199 there. That's another grandma's couch cushion. Throw that on Rinya Nakamura by sub plus 300. And yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like, something's going on, so they just don't know how he's going to win. But ultimately, you guys in the chat are what makes this show so incredible. Aaron, please let Charlie Kelly in the chat know how everyone can follow you and where they can find you. We're going to bring us all up here full screen to close it out. So Aaron, yeah, go ahead before the guru takes us away.
Just go to www.aaron.report and it has all my links to all my stuff. So easy to find.
Beautiful. Love that. And what do you got to say to the people before we let the guru take us on our closing place here? Thank you for joining us, man.
What I've got to say is I'm thankful for shows like this because, you know, when I'm reporting all week long, I don't think people really understand that, like, I like, and just like the people that love this sport and follow the sport, like, Saturday is my day. Like, I'm so excited to see how these matchups play out. Like, as much as I like interviewing, talking to these athletes and, you know, getting into the weeds and doing news and all that, like, for me, it's still about the fights. And I don't think there are a lot of reporters that still have that same enthusiasm for every Saturday. Like, even if it's like a greasy Apex card, I'm still like super excited to see how it's going to play out. So, you know, the matchups to me, like, whether it's the best card that you can put together or like the worst card that can be put together, I still have like a high level of enthusiasm every Saturday. So thankful to you guys for looking into the matchups and talking about those particular things.
You are honestly welcome here. You would like, Aaron, we'll honestly look to have you back at least once more this year. You'll grace us with your presence. So, at least one. I mean, you're just starting. Hell yeah. But we'll take you as many as we can get you, pal. But thanks so much for being here. We really, really appreciate your time. It means the world to us that you come on. So seriously, thanks. Guys, everybody in the chat, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for being a part. Please like, share, subscribe if you haven't already. We are going to have a special episode on Tuesday around 4 o'clock. We are interviewing Kyle the Monster Nelson. So we are very excited to have Kyle Canadian on. Yeah, fellow Canadian. So we were very excited to have a chat with him about his upcoming matchup. And we are also going to have on Wednesday, we're going to do our Mexico City show. Very, very awesome card. Can't wait to talk about that one. We've got John Sargarian on slated to come on. So we're very, very excited to have him on as well. So make sure you tune in then. If you're liked and subscribed and you want to do something else, turn on those alerts. Turn on those alerts. I feel like we don't tell people to do that enough. Turn on those alerts because you'll get notifications when we go live. So you won't ever miss a show. So thanks so much for being a part. And we will see you next week.